Conferences. Long agendas, big venues, always on your feet, barely getting to see the people that you want to see, and then, of course, the expense. Well, the three of us at Good Morning Hospitality are launching Good Morning Retreats. Our first retreat is this July 8th through the 10th at the Horst Hospitality Training School in Auburn, Alabama. If you go to goodmorningretreats.com, you'll find out more information about our first retreat that we're launching. We have already filled half the slots. We have 20 available and we have about 13 already filled. So make sure you go there, you apply, show your interest, and we'll get you all situated for our first ever Good Morning Retreat. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast. And now back to the episode. Hey everyone, I was hoping to get this message put together sooner, but things like this unfortunately take time to set up. I just want to say that the acts of war against Ukraine break my heart, and I know as a prior service member myself that my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone who's fighting the fight that they really shouldn't have to. That being said, we have been working behind the scenes with all of our podcasts and podcast partners to put a fund together in order to pay for any refugee housing and other needs that go alongside that, like food, water, and any clothing needs. Internally, many podcasts in the Hospitality FM network have voluntarily given up sponsorship money in order to donate to the cause and are working on a unified message in order to spread throughout all of our podcasts. So this is me calling out to all of our property manager friends, industry experts, and anyone knowing of those providing lodging for Ukrainian refugees seeking safety. You can contact me directly at Will, with one L, W-I-L, at slicktalkmedia.com. We have an internal document that is being updated in real time, so if anyone could share this message within your network, we'd greatly appreciate it. I'm also placing in the show notes a link to our GoFundMe and landing page for Rentals to Rescue. That's rentalstorescue.com, where we're putting funds together in order to, again, provide finances for any of these lodging and relocation needs. So thank you so much for tuning into this quick message. I hope you guys are all well and safe, as I know we have tons of listeners in Ukraine and other countries in Europe. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode.
I love that intro song. Gets my head bumping. Good morning.
Heyo.
Good morning. You're so cool today. You look like you're a startup guy.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I just have to be on brand like always, you know.
You're still in your 20s.
But they're sponsoring us? Or?
Yeah, for sure. For sure, sponsored. Brand new. Just signed the contract. Okay. What is up? How was last week? I totally forgot what even happened last week. Did we do an episode? I think we did. We did an episode.
Of course we did. It was the best episode we've done in a long time, actually.
All right. Actually,
it was really good. Can you summarize, Will, what we discussed last week?
Yeah. What are the top 3 points, Will?
So many good things. Book Direct Show was popping in London.
Nope, that was 2 weeks ago. Nice job.
Dang it. Well, it's been a long week. So anyways, I guess we have a fun episode today. Good friend of the podcast is going to be joining us, Ella from Auto Host. We got a cool What's With the Noise. We got great startup of the week with Bidruption, which was Bidruption. It's no longer. We took that away. So anything new and exciting for you guys?
Yeah, I'd first like to say, Will, let's get a cup of coffee because you're definitely off your game this morning. But aside from that, Ross, anything?
No, just let's start. That's a quick VF also on board. So let's do it.
All right, perfect. Let's do What's With the Noise. Here we go.
So 2021 has largely been the announcement of travel companies going public, but aside from Airbnb, the next one in the short-term rental space to go actually public was Home2Go last week. So congrats to all of the Home2Go people, some of whom I've known for 5 or 6 years back when they were a meta site. Now they're becoming more of an OTA. And some of them I've known from other roles within the industry that have recently joined to be a part of the exciting growth. So congrats, everybody at Home2Go. We're looking forward to seeing what you guys do with this and how far you can take it.
This intro is so cool. Yeah, again, as Will said, we changed this Bitruption report into start of the week. So we make it really startup wise. And we have a special one this week. It's called Recreation Rentals. For the people who are just watching, they saw probably on the cap of Mr. Will Slickers, as he's one of the founders of this amazing new company. He started together with Adam Knight. So both two famous podcast guys starting a management company. So guys, good luck. Will be nice to have you once in the episode as well to know more about it. But great to have them as startup of the week. Follow them. You can watch their website. Look at their website at recreationstays.com. More news as well this week. Ukio, I never heard of them before. They actually raised $9 million investments. Actually, so guys, good luck. They actually focusing on boutique apartments, long stay, at least 1 month stay. So nice round. I didn't heard them before. For sure, I will check them out. My good friend Ulrich Kastner, actually, he sold my hotel shop actually to RateGain. So nice acquisition. So good. Well done, Ulrich. Just want to mention this one. And we go still, even though it was before a topic of Bitruption reports events. But if this one is a special one because on the 30th of September, we have the Revenue Summit, which is actually organized by IMUT Hotel / of course, sponsored as well by Bitroom. So check them out. You can still register for free. So 30th of September, IMUT Hotel. Anything else? Yeah, I also want to start actually with some terms, startup terms. This one is the LTV. Well, as we have Will already in the episode as well, one of the founders of the start of the week. Will, can you explain what an LTV is?
Not a clue. Not at all. No.
No? Come on. This is the most important. This is the most important one. Okay, Michael for sure knows.
It's the lifetime value of your customer, Will.
There we go. There we go. It's a little early, but
Will is off his game. Michael, we're gonna have to lead this episode. So $9 million seed round is insane. They must be buying real estate.
Looks like it's kind of just
there's no other way to raise $9 million in a seed round without hard assets behind it. Right?
Yeah, no, I have to,
is money flowing that freely right now?
I don't think so easily. No. So for sure it must be need buying assets, buying real estate or something, but for sure, look into them. Maybe they will be startup of the week coming weeks. But yeah, it's not easy to become startup of the week. The criteria is really, really high. So have a look at them to see if they can make it in this category.
It's like 100% month over month growth, I believe, for recreation rentals. So
this is one of the conditions we need. Otherwise, not even mentioned in here. So,
Your CAC to LTV is probably pretty high right now. Except LTV is kind of an unknown quantity because you're relatively new.
So you just have to very new. We're very OTA dependent at the time. So we're very, very strong in that, but we're building up our database of repeat direct booking customers. So all good stuff.
Okay. So make sure there's no churn, Will.
Exactly. So somebody who's actually going to know more about startup stuff and terms and all that good stuff will be Ella. So I'm going to welcome her to the show because she's a great friend. She's the reason why we're here this Monday morning. And she's probably going to wake me up from my weird funk that I've been in this Monday morning. So here we go. We're going to welcome Ella.
Hello.
Ella.
Hi. What an intro.
Happy morning. Sorry, I didn't get better at my intros recently, but I am excited to have you on because not only are you on Good Morning Hospitality today, but this week you're also on Slick Talk, which is exciting. We got to do a deep dive on what's happened this last year with you and AutoHost and, you know, the overall safety of travel. And it's just really exciting times to have you on. So thanks for joining us on Monday.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is exciting.
Did you get to have your coffee?
I'm working on it. I'm like, right. Working, and it's just the first one. So, perfect. Yeah.
Can you share some of that with Will?
Through the screen. Well, awesome. How about for those who don't know about AutoHost and your story, can you just give us a quick recap, what you do, how you got started, all that good stuff?
Yeah. All of you guys have these mugs. Okay, we're going to talk later.
Okay, I'll get you one.
yes, I can. In a nutshell, I mean, I originally come from the hospitality space. So like many tech startups, you need to kind of know what the problem is before you start solving it. So I was in short-term rental management. We had a really successful short-term rental company here in Toronto. And so slowly, as scale came up, problems also did. And AutoHost is a guest screening platform. So we kind of handle the automation side of things within the trust and safety. So we have any hospitality operator have their guests go through a screening process, agreeing to rules, providing ID, doing all the data point matching, security deposits, rules, guest list, and so on. And then a lot of the magic really happens on the background, as we really come from the cybersecurity space. And so we really care to see how do we help larger companies as they scale, really identify which guests can just go through the automation and the process flow and be verified to continue. And then which small percentage really requires your attention. So we'll kind of take out the black box that is the guest.
For sure. And you and I got to jump into it a little bit on Slick Talk, but you know, coming from the hotel world, I'm kind of curious, Michael Ross, from your perspective, when you hear about all this stuff, what do you think, you know, because you work with a lot of hoteliers, a lot of different systems around the world. So when it comes to guest screening, do you think maybe hotels are a little bit lacking in this area? Or do you think this is something that hotels are doing better at recently with the last 18 months or so?
For sure, they're lacking. And one of the things I was planning even in the beginning, but not everybody was so happy with the idea, just let hotels write reviews about guests. Actually turned around, right? It's really interesting to know what kind of guests do you actually want to have in your hotel. And can you also change maybe your prices connected to the behavior of the guests, right? If somebody taking care of the room and don't destroy half it, or just in that case, maybe there's different ways. Okay, how can you incentivize them if they're not using, for example, other towels, whatever, focusing on an echo. So it's pretty interesting to know your customer better. I think hotels not doing this so well, in my opinion. It just, even though you're checking off and then even though that you're just stayed there five times before. So I think it's something what the hotels has to do much, much better.
Do you think it's naive or intentional?
I think it's even both. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good question. Well, I've just, from my perspective of being an operator and like starting in the industry in hotels, vacation rentals or even short-term rentals, depending on whatever you want to call them, is the only one that's really actually taken guest screening to the next level from what I've seen. You know, when I was a front desk manager, it was overall just like, all right, what OTA did they book on? Did their credit card decline? Is it a one-night stay? Is it a last-minute booking? Are they a local? Like, all these little red flags. That was our screening. That was it. And then when they showed up at the desk, how did you feel about your interaction with them?
Do they look sketchy?
Yeah, did they look sketchy? Were they acting weird? Did, you know, whatever it may be. There's a lot of little things. So, Ella, I guess for you, can you jump into maybe some things? I'm kind of curious if you saw, just as you guys started AutoHost and started, you know, developing more and more into the product and what your services are, were there things that popped up that you weren't expecting when it came to screening and finding out like bad guests and all this other stuff? Or is there anything that just kind of like took you by surprise?
That's an interesting question. I think I wasn't expecting clients and users to actually push us to be better at anti-discrimination. So to put the entire trust and safety aside, a user that signs up with AutoHost, I mean, making sure that we flag risks is the bare minimum requirement. And so larger companies, and we're talking large scale, as they start being aware of their social responsibility, awareness of the industry they play in and kind of what role and what image they want to portray, they really care to find the right balance between, I'm not screening guests based on whether they look sketchy per se, but rather they really appreciate AutoHost bringing in objective data points, which means kind of like you said, I mean, if a credit card fails, that's an objective data point. Having said that, if the first three failed because they were reported stolen and the fourth one went through, that should probably still be flagged. And in some cases it isn't, or, you know, story mismatches or locality issues or things like that. So I think that it was a pleasant surprise to see our customers embracing the removal of booking restrictions. Like, for example, when you're doing thorough screening, you don't have to avoid last minute reservations. We don't want you to. Mm-hmm. You don't have to avoid locals. You don't have to avoid booking.com. But given that, before AutoHost, users really had to find their risk tolerance, and a lot of that ended up being personal judgment calls. So I think that's my biggest, really impressive surprise, that we get to keep developing technology and keep improving and saying, what's an objective piece of information that we know about this guest? What could be suspicious about their booking, rather than do they look like they're of a certain race, age, gender, orientation, socioeconomic status, or whatever that may be. So that's kind of a nice surprise, and we get to keep developing and get better at it.
For sure. I love that.
I've got the feeling that in Europe, we are 5, 6, maybe even longer years behind. If you're looking at, for example, automation, or, for example, the tools you're delivering to vacation rental, I think in the US or Canada, they're much further. Do you see the same?
So it's interesting. We do have a number of US users. We're larger in North America, but it's interesting you said that, because it's true. We're finding that with US, with European users, that the learning curve, the ones that embrace it really, really like it, but you're right. They feel like they're the forefront of automation and bringing in technology. Our teams help them with a bit of, you know, process restructuring. So it's interesting. I just don't think I ever made that connection. I assumed it was specific chains or operators, but it might be a European thing.
But is it connected also to ownership when you see in the US or just say North America, there's a lot of people just owning a lot of assets or real estate and just going to short-term rental when it's still in Europe, a lot of individuals?
Yeah. Ella, what do you think your sweet spot is? Like, the Marriotts of the world are probably, they probably have different layers of checks in, maybe not nearly as sophisticated as AutoHost, but what we find at NoiseAware is, like, it, especially on the hotel side of the world, kind of these small, medium-sized boutiques that don't have 24-hour staff or have automated check-in are much more inclined to be our users and likely users of AutoHost. Is that the same with you guys?
So, AutoHost and NoiseAware, we do overlap with a lot, and we have mutual clients, and our partnership is great for them. It's really that. I think that the smaller hotels, be it boutiques or just chains that have smaller hotels, and their migration away from the traditional reception desk, the money that is spent on having those areas, it really is our, you know, the entry into that space. So we're seeing the two worlds kind of, you know, converging. At the moment, it's not yet the Hiltons and the Marriotts, although, I mean, I think there's other things to address, like either turning a blind eye or naive lack of screening, which I think we're still going to go in the right direction in the coming future. But for now, yeah, it's exactly those hotels that are saying, you know what, the STR space, we're not going to fight it. They're actually doing some things better than us. Let's embrace it. And so those types of hotels, even if they do still have a reception desk, they can reduce the dependence on guests coming in whichever time and filling out forms, or the receptionist just looking at them last minute, making a decision, and they're embracing more of a pre-check-in process. Like, everybody's familiar with airplanes. Like, it's not actually that big of a learning curve for guests to receive a message from your hotel saying, you know, hi, Michael, thanks for booking. Please follow this before your stay so that your check-in is smooth and seamless and touchless and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. COVID helped there as well. So it is those smaller ones that are embracing how can we make things more efficient.
Yeah. And Will and Ross, when you guys worked in hotels, how frequent or did you ever send a guest away when they walked in?
Well, I was going to, yeah. So Ella and I kind of jumped into this a little bit in our episode last week or coming up this week. But, you know, there was quite a few times, depending on the property, like when I was at the Autograph Collection, you know, it's a 4-diamond hotel. Rarely did we ever have to turn anyone away. It was most likely due to they were an obvious standout in the sense, like, the card was torn up and looked like it went through the ringer and it was declining every time and they had no other thing to use. We also had one guest, like, I distinctly remember, escaped from the psych ward and showed up in their uniform. So, like, that's a pretty obvious, like, you know, turn away. But when you're in different markets, like a good beach town that's very small, probably, and this is no like judgment or anything, but like more likely lower income families that usually spend up all year long to save to go out to the beach for the week. And sometimes they would have issues with credit cards or other stuff like that. So it was very rare on that sense, but there were cases that, you know, you can kind of pick up on indicators from the booking itself.
Michael, I think that it's interesting you asked him about hotels, but I think that with hotels, the biggest goal one day is not necessarily going to be to turn guests away, but again, to continue de-risking, de-escalating, right? I mean, noise aware. The intention isn't to go ahead and kick somebody out mid-party, ideally. Ideally is catch it on time, tell them to settle down, and then everybody wins. So I think it's really similar. If and when or when hotels start embracing it, the process is going to be very much, let's just know your guests. Let's do the responsible thing. You have more of their information. They're agreeing to rules. You're de-escalating any possible risk that could go on. If it's a group of guests, you want everybody's names, right? I mean, Will going on a business trip for 4 days is very different, no offense, than probably Will going on a bachelor party with 8 friends for a weekend in a penthouse in Miami. It's not fraud, but you still want the information there and the rules agreed to, and a security deposit on file.
Yeah.
Michael Ross is smiling. You went on a bachelor party with him?
Imagine what that looks like. Not yet. It'll happen one day.
So, but I have some news to share, Will.
No. Not at all. But I kind of have a question because I'm a user of NoiseAware particularly, and so I know about the noise risk score. I'm curious, Michael Golden, is there a way that AutoHost, like, does a product or a tool like AutoHost help, you know, indicate that noise risk score with a pre-screening, or is it all about the decibel?
I think a future state there certainly can. So if AutoHost has kind of a red light, yellow light, green light, and it can potentially adjust the sensitivities on the acceptable noise levels. So if it's a green light, Will's on a business trip, we're fine, don't touch it. If it's a yellow or red light, Will's on a bachelor party, like maybe shift the quiet hours from 10 p.m. to 8 p.m. and drop the acceptable noise levels just to try and get out ahead of it before it gets out of hand.
And trigger a message sooner or something. Yeah, definitely. So I will say that we're currently integrated. So, I mean, AutoHost and NoiseAware are integrated, and AutoHost user are able to log in, see the noise graph, and then make the correlation, right? Is a spike because suddenly the TV volume went really high, or does it seem like it's a party slowly growing? So the integration is there, and we're extremely proud of it, and we're happy that the users get to see both of these things and see how their multiple lines of defense are working at the same time. I think that we do have machine learning in place, and we're learning all the time. So down the line, if we're talking predictive, if we're saying, hey, you know what, these 7 parameters in the past have normally resulted that NoiseAware triggered something, I think that's definitely next level, but not that far off that we should definitely be looking at.
When I was like 15 or 16, I never worked in a hotel, by the way, Michael, but nevertheless. So, but yeah, when I was 15 or 16, I actually worked for a holiday park in their call center. And often when there was a group booking, I tried to filter and then, okay, what kind of group is it? And that was actually, I get those instructions. And as soon you know, it will be like a group of young guys, like we'll go for a party. As soon you just know what kind of, if it's like, it's okay, it could create some trouble. We are so prepared, so okay, or when we say, okay, we're really not sure, just saying, sorry, it's fully booked. Sometimes, or we just had to say we really place them at the end of the park as far away as possible from other guests. And we knew that those cottages or bungalows or houses, give them a name, actually had different kind of quality or standard than, for example, the rest of the houses, because we know there's a chance that some things will be destroyed. You think that will be, maybe could be the case also with hotels. It's like we have some rooms still, if we're not sure about this guest, we just give them a different room than the one who just refurbished, and we give them the one who still has to be refurbished or one which is but older. You think they will use this data eventually to,
That's awesome.
Direct them to specific rooms.
It's pseudo screening. It's still manual screening. It's cool that you guys went through this, right?
Yeah, I was 15, so that's really 20 years ago. Come on.
Scalable, but that's exactly the judgment call. Also, I like that. You're not necessarily canceling them because there's money on the table. You just know they're going to be a little bit louder. You should still have, you know, some security in place so they don't trash the place. But a few spilled drinks is worth the cleaning fee. I don't know. So that's still kind of a good consideration to have. But you should be asking those questions. So that's definitely what companies are doing. And then when you scale, you want to automate that. So.
Well, my real question, and Ella, we just also discussed this on the other podcast, but you know, your guys' virtual screening is like it's like the same work that a front desk agent would do at a hotel. It's, you know, confirming the name, the photo ID, debit and credit card, all that good stuff. Exactly. But you guys go into a deeper discovery in the background. My thing is, as an operator, and I try to play devil's advocate, and Michael Golden knows this because we'll talk on behind the scenes, and then I'm like, but as an operator, I struggle with this. And he's like, yeah, but as a provider, we do this. But it's always interesting to find out, you know, with the guests responding. Like, so you can have these automated messages. Getting the guests to fill it out, though, is one whole new different task. What are some things that you've seen either other operators or partners that you guys have to actually get the guests to fill it out? Because I know if you make it mandatory and a guest books and then they don't fill it out and they get their automated key code to their rental, they kind of have the keys to the kingdom. You can always deactivate the code, of course, but I guess my thing is, how do you make sure the guests actually fill it out?
Right. So let's start off by saying that your fallback is whatever it is you're doing right now, right? And what we're trying to do is let's take care of 90% of that volume. So first of all, it's interesting to know that a lot of the guests just do. So we're in a digital age. Guests check their email. The majority of people are tech savvy. They don't have to be very tech savvy. There's simplicity in a very convenient mobile process. I mean, you can upload things, agree to stuff. The feeling that I'm going to take care of everything in advance and therefore my check-in is going to be smoother. And again, because we're familiar with the concept from the airline industry, first of all, you'll be surprised that you don't need to get guests to do anything. A majority just do. Then you have things like, let's bug them a little bit, just like you would if right now you're doing pseudo screening, which we also, I think, talked about, and I recommend it. If you're not doing anything, move on to pseudo screening. And from that, move on to more professional and objective screening. But even if you're doing your pseudo screening and your team messages the guests back and forth, crazy friction, very inefficient, legitimate guests might get annoyed by it, but they still need to answer the questions and they're responsive. So it's kind of the same thing. I mean, we send some automated reminders and so on. And then at the end of the day, every user will have their process. Some of our clients are very much adamant about, as soon as you book, you have 3 days to complete this. Otherwise, I'm not holding my calendar blocked. We have other users that are saying, you know what? We can shuffle some things around. I don't care if they show up at the property and they fill it out on the spot. And then the majority fall somewhere in between. So the average user would have a threshold of, say, 3 days before check-in, 5 days before check-in, where the whatever percentage, small percentage of guests didn't complete this yet, that's when they move on to giving them a call or arranging an in-person check-in. So you should still have all of those fallbacks in place, but the majority are being taken care of.
For sure. That's good to know. Yeah, that's just the one thing I always say. I have to play devil's advocate a little bit. You know, how do you guys ensure that?
And you know what? It's not just technology. You'll also have, you know, somebody calling in and saying, I'm not giving my ID online. I'm not even connected to Wi-Fi. And this is all a conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be your judgment call to say, you know what, sir? No problem at all. Let me just turn that off for you. So, I mean, overriding the system, having, you know, using your judgment is all realistic. We're trying to help operators take care of the majority of instances.
For sure.
How you deal with the data protection part? Because it's a huge topic in here in Europe. I don't know how it is in the US, but in here is everybody who's storing any data, using data, who's using the data, which form, how long, etc. It's insane. GDPR stuff. So, this is different in the US and also with your...
It's a little bit, it's less intense and there's less privacy concerns in the States. But even because of that, and specifically because of that in Europe, companies, as they grow and they need to start requesting those things, authority reporting comes into play, requirements, they're actually stuck in the situation of how do I do this? So you have large companies, without throwing any names out there, but very large companies still asking for IDs to be emailed, which is illegal. Anybody who's listening to this, you cannot be doing this. Credit cards being taken over the phone, people asking for selfies. We're not going to go into the fact that selfies are extreme violation of privacy. You don't know what position, what form, what they're wearing, what they actually took a picture of. So even there, AutoHost comes in, and us being a cybersecurity company, we actually come in with the right tool. So as an operator, you're not in the business of tech. So making sure that the IDs are encrypted, and like you said, that they're saved on file for 7 years, or unless requested, they can be deleted. If a background check is run, your guest can request something. If you need to submit for a chargeback, you can provide a log of things. The credit card is obviously masked, and so on. So if anything, so AutoHost is in charge of the data security and privacy, and therefore the individual operators don't have to worry about that, which is a huge concern. And the larger a company grows, the more likely they're going to get scrutiny from people, authorities, the random lawsuit. That's probably bigger in the States, but definitely something to keep in mind.
How weird are these selfies getting, Ella?
Can you share some? No.
We've seen interesting selfies, and even there, it's important. So I was talking about clients that are driving us to be better. There have been some companies that requested for us to just do the analysis, because the reason we take a selfie is for the facial recognition. It's not to see if the person is sketchy or not. We have their ID, we have their selfie. I mean, one day I would love for them to be required to take the selfie at the door, and you know, then the lock would open or whatever that will be. So we've had companies requesting to hide some information and only show the final result of the test. So selfies get weird.
How do you see this whole process of Apple ID? Then I go into wallets, unlocking your doors with your with your Apple ID or your
I think that all of, I mean, it's better than having your Airbnb profile, you know, having an ID on file, because we've had cases of abuse. You have, it might be a real ID, but it's a 19-year-old that you paid off, and you're actually a local, you know, gang or booking on behalf of somebody else. So moving on to Apple IDs and phones, I think will help ensure it's the person who they say they are. And then having said that, even going back to the Will example, sorry for picking on you, for any given reservation, you still want the guest to, so even if we're not suspecting actual fraud and stolen identity or illegal activity going on behind closed doors, there's still elements of you need a security deposit and you need a ID on file and you might want to get covered and you might want to make sure they agree to rules and do you risk the reservation to make sure they're well behaved. So all of that can still work in collaboration with opening your door with an ID and the selfie matching stuff. So I mean, there's still a lot that could come from technology. I don't think that's gonna hurt it. It's gonna be a very good progress.
Well, question, because we work closely with Visa as a critical company for a partnership, but you see it's still the way of people, how they're making reservations online and guarantee their reservations by credit card. And now people are just stopping with their credit cards. They go into all different kind of payment methods. Do you see any way of other like guarantees instead of using a credit card? Or you see some technology out there, or do you provide them by yourself?
Right now, if you're booking through OTAs, it would be either credit card. Sometimes it would be the OTA taking care of it. I mean, Airbnb reservations, your payment is guaranteed, but you don't necessarily know, you know, who's walking in all the time. Fraud is not big on Airbnb, but, you know, parties and rule compliance and those types of issues are. Right now, credit cards are definitely big. I know that larger companies, I mean, even, you know, Smiling House and companies that really go towards the larger reservations and very high end, they don't necessarily process credit card transactions, right? They could be using very high amounts. I mean, it's tens of thousands of dollars for a weekend or a week. Although it's interesting because, I spoke about this to Moria in one of our clubhouses. Now you're getting into money laundering territory, and that's a whole other story. So other things you want to be making sure when you're analyzing payment, even if your payment is guaranteed, you want to know who the person booking is. And there's still really important elements of knowing your guests behind all of these things. But I don't see credit cards going away.
But you see this like this whole blockchain or crypto then seen this as a concern, as you can identify the real user or the owner?
I think that the operators are going to be the ones driving it. So like if hotels say, we don't care, we get the money, that's all good. I think that the advocacy on the other side, understanding that you should care, is going to be the main factor. And then maybe, I mean, I'm very much also concerned about the serious areas of fraud and what happens behind it. And you're getting into drug smuggling and escort services and sex trafficking. And that's problematic. So I'm probably going to be on the side of the equation that pushes for more visibility. But we'll see what the operators push for.
I'll be on that same side with you, Ella. So don't worry. Golden, you've been quiet. It's unusual.
Yeah, I was just thinking that in my head too. I was like, I haven't spoken much. No, I think there's the interesting dynamic between what can and should be on the blockchain and what shouldn't. And this sits exactly in the middle. Like, I think payments will get a lot better coming off of the blockchain, a lot less fraud. But the flip side is chargebacks.
I don't know if it's going to be less fraud, but less chargebacks.
Well, how can you create fraud on blockchain?
No, I guess when I mean fraud, I'm more talking about, no, not fraud. I'm talking illegal activity, I guess. You're right. It would be less fraud, less chargebacks.
So the payment side of the business is going to be a lot better.
It won't be stolen credit cards.
But the anonymity is going to be a lot worse.
Exactly.
I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I think that's exactly where products like yours and ours fit into the equation. If you have screening on the front end, you have noiseware for monitoring during the stay, and you have some sort of insurance at the end of it, like ultimately you're covered from start to finish. But yeah, the anonymity on blockchain, kind of noodle on that one.
Yeah.
Specifically for our industry, right? Like there's something problematic. I mean, it's one thing when you purchase a shirt and it's a transaction, but it's a different thing when you're renting a space to be
letting someone into your house.
Yeah. To be given privacy. House or hotel, but to be given privacy behind closed doors, and then you're getting into where is your, I mean, obligation, legal or social or moral, to screen and make sure that what goes on there is something that you stand behind.
For sure. There's definitely something very different about, like you said, a shirt being bought with crypto or blockchain versus a shared space where people are living, quote unquote, even as just for a night, they're still living there.
But there's still got to be a way of taking the booking via blockchain or crypto and gathering the information you need to verify the booking, right?
Michael, do you have a lot of cryptocurrency to get rid of? Is that why you're curious?
I wish I had a lot more to get rid of. Yeah. No, I just think it's this juxtaposition. It's not much different than what we already deal with today, right? Like, one of the easiest places to launder money is probably through short-term rentals, right? Like, yeah.
And laundromats.
Dry cleaners, all that stuff. But short-term rentals is—it's not a challenging gap to bridge. Hotels also cash payments, right? Like, it's an easy space.
STRs might take more cash than hotels, although I don't know, right? Like you
I was gonna say the hotel world, I had so many people offer cash versus short-term rentals. No, it's like I've never
exactly because they're afraid. Because, I mean, you trust the OTAs, and hotels will be dealing with a lot more cash. And then we're getting into the whole issue of what Ross mentioned before. Is it naive or is it intentional? And are you turning a blind eye as long as the payment goes through? And, I mean, even, being responsible, some crimes are very silent. So all of your monitoring throughout is so important.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, this is definitely could be its whole own segment.
Let's do next week or something about blockchain and security. It's interesting because we never took this topic so far try to avoid this topic. But let's do it.
Next week we'll be live at VRMA for our 50th anniversary of our episode.
That's good timing.
I know.
Really good.
I'll make sure to find you guys and say hi.
Oh, of course. We'll have to do a live segment with you in person. I'll have the microphone like in your face like this. Ella, I think I told you about this little segment we've been trying out. It's pretty fun. Michael Golden, how many brands total under the top 5 or 6? It was like 108 or something like that.
It's 119 from 6 brands.
Okay, so there's 6 hotel brands, Marriott, Hilton, Accor, IHG, Best Western, and Hyatt. Choice or what? Hyatt. So we're taking those top 6. We're finding one of their soft brands underneath.
So for sure, it's not higher today, and it's already like one.
I keep it.
It's Choice Hotels.
And we take one of their soft brands, and we try to guess whose brand it belongs to. So
are we giving them credit for choosing based on name? Let's see it. I'll see it in action.
Yeah. So a little fun segment. Here we go. Whose brand is it anyways? Not whose line is it anyways. And here we go.
Le Meridien.
This is Starwood.
I'm going to say Hilton.
I'm going to trust Ross on this and say Marriott. It's a core.
Yes.
No. Well, Starwood, yeah, I can give you a half a point for Starwood. It's Marriott technically.
Yeah.
Now.
But before it was Starwood.
Well, that's why I said Marriott first. Because I trusted Ross knew it was Starwood. I knew Starwood.
I stayed in one. That's why I remember. I stayed twice in the Meridien.
Oh.
Actually, that's why I remember. Once in London and once in Warsaw. So there's, come on, this was not so difficult. So,
half a point because it's technically Marriott now, but I'll be gentle and kind, you know.
Sweet.
When they started,
2 weeks in a row then, huh?
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row. About time you caught up. Good night. All right. Well, Ella, I just want to say thank you so much for being a great guest. You have a lot of value and a lot of information to bring to the table. Shameless plug and shout out. Your episode is coming out on the 30th this week. So anyone who is listening today can listen to Ella again in a deeper story on Thursday. So I'm excited.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, I think this wraps up our episode this week, guys, and we'll see you all again next week.